Greetings, programs, and welcome to Quarks and Recreation. This is our first episode on black holes. I'm one of your co-hosts, Doug.
And I'm your other co-host, Brandon.
And as we said before, we're covering black holes in this episode, which of course begs an important question. What is a black hole?
A black hole is anything but empty space, a great amount of matter packed into a very small area.
It's not just a great amount of matter packed into a very small area. It's actually a mass at least usually 10 times the size of our sun or more. Essentially, what happens is when a star dies of a certain magnitude, if it's big enough, its own gravity will be so large that no force can stop it from pulling itself smaller and smaller and smaller until it becomes a black hole. And the reason it's called black is no light can escape.
Kind of like my brother's head.
Yes, it's a lot like the inside of a small child's cranium. Nothing gets in, well, rather, everything gets in and nothing gets out. It's a really scary place to be, actually. Unfortunately for us, they're very, very far away. There aren't any black holes for light years and light years around, which is another way of saying trillions upon trillions of miles. So you can rest assured you are not going to get sucked into one anytime soon.
Well, that's nice.
I'm glad that we're both going to live, at least not die from black holes.
Yeah.
You're way more likely to get, swallowed by a shark. Or
die from a bee infection.
Yes, a bee infection. An infection of bees. They're equally as common. I guess the best way to describe how a black hole forms is let's talk about what stars are. Stars are engines that turn hydrogen atoms into helium atoms by squishing them together. That's what makes them shine so bright. But, of course, eventually, even no matter how big a star is, and our sun, for example, is... you could fit a million Earths inside of it. They still run out of gas eventually anyway. Once that happens, some really, really unusual things start to take place inside the star. It doesn't just run out of gas and fizzle out and go dark.
It grows.
It grows. And depending on how big the star is to start with, that will govern what happens to it at the end of its life. So our sun is about 4.5 billion years old.
That's old.
It's pretty old. Our whole universe is about 13.6 or 8 billion years old. So the sun is relatively young here in the universe, but eventually it will run out of steam in another 5 or so, maybe 6 billion years if it's lucky.
So you don't have to worry about that.
That's right. You do not need end-of-the-world insurance, at least for the sun. You are safe from this happening as well. We're going to be talking about a lot of cataclysmic, horrible things on this show.
Yes.
And the good news is they're all very, very far away. When the star runs out of fuel, our sun, what will happen is it'll get really hot as the helium starts to turn into other kinds of elements in there. And the heat will push the outside skin of the sun outward, even though its gravity is trying to pull it inward. So for a while, the outward force is going to be winning, and the sun will get bigger and bigger and redder until it becomes a red giant star, and it'll be so big that it actually will be larger than the orbit of the Earth and swallow everything up.
Well, kind of like a shark.
Yes, this is the sun version of the shark swallowing everything up. After that happens, the sun will shrink down to a white dwarf. It'll blow off all of its outer layers as a hot gas. And what we'll be left with is a tiny little white dwarf star that's about the size of the Earth. And it will slowly, slowly cool over time. But black holes come from bigger stars. When you get a bigger star, something else happens on the inside.
Has to be almost, I think, at least 3 times the size of the sun.
Well, at least 3 times the size of the sun will get you towards what's called a supernova.
Supernova.
And what happens in a supernova is, think of the inside of the star kind of like a jawbreaker. There's lots of little layers on the inside because you've got all this hydrogen and it's turning into helium. And the helium goes down into the middle. And then when it runs out of hydrogen to turn into helium, it starts trying to turn the helium into a heavier atom. And a heavier one and a heavier one. And you get different layers until you get to iron. And unfortunately, the star doesn't have the processes to turn iron into anything bigger or heavier. So all of a sudden, all of the processes inside the star's core come to a grinding halt. And the outside of the star, without starts to fall in. The gravity of the star always wants to pull it in towards the middle. And the heat of the star pushes it out, and it keeps it equal. But now that the star's core is turned to iron, and it's not doing any more work, and it's not pushing out anymore, the outside of the star falls in on it. Well, it falls in, and then the entire, you know, three solar masses, trillions and trillions of tons of matter, falls in, hits, and then bounces back out from the force. And that shockwave produces one of the brightest objects in the known universe. It is a supernova explosion, and it completely obliterates most of the star.
Can humans see a supernova explosion?
They can, actually. In fact, we've seen many. They happen from time to time. They're maybe once every few years or so, we might spy one in another galaxy. They're so bright that they actually outshine everything else in the galaxy by leaps and bounds. So they're very easy to see, even though they're very, very far away, and they don't happen that often. However, every once in a while, we get one in our neighborhood. There was one, I believe, in 1986 that was visible from the southern hemisphere. So we couldn't see it here in California where we are. But if you live in Australia or South America in the 1980s and you looked up, you would see it as a big, bright ball in the sky.
Bigger than the sun?
Not bigger than the sun, but almost as bright. It would be visible during the daytime. That's how bright a supernova is, especially from closer up, relatively speaking. And once that happens, they leave behind a big cloud of gas and dust, and in the middle will be some kind of a neutron star or a pulsar, basically the leftover remnants of that star's core doing some very, very weird things. But again, the inside of the star and the outside of the star is a gravity war. So the mass of the star is huge, so gravity is always pulling it in. Well, if nothing is there to push it back out, gravity will keep winning and winning until gravity totally wins out. And that's what happens in a black hole. A black hole comes from a star that's so big that not even the tiniest, most powerful forces in the known universe can win against it. And when that happens, it crushes down to what's called a singularity, a tiny, tiny pinpoint in space. And the gravity is so strong that light cannot get out. And that's where the name black hole comes from.
And why is it? How is it proven that it comes just from a star? Is there any evidence that it can come neither than a star?
Actually, yes. It can come from... you can turn any amount of matter into a black hole. All it takes is taking enough matter and squishing it into a small enough space. At that point, you can create a black hole. In fact, we've actually created black holes in the laboratory here on Earth. They've been very, very, very tiny black holes, microscopic black holes that evaporate and disappear a few milliseconds after they're formed. And that's a good thing for us, because if they stuck around any longer than that, they'd start eating and growing, and it would be the end of the world. But thankfully, scientists who create these black holes in a lab actually know what they're doing, and they've done their homework and they know the math. So you can actually make a black hole out of anything, but typically where they occur in the universe, they are star stuff. Some are made out of one star, some are made out of multiple stars coming together. In the center of just about every galaxy, we believe there is a supermassive black hole, because there's so many stars gathered in such a small space, they end up coming together because of gravity and forming a much, much, much larger black hole than you would normally find anywhere else.
Oh, well, one thing you could think of is think of a star 10 times more massive than the sun squeezed into a sphere approximately the diameter of New York City.
That's about right. The center of a black hole would be very, very small compared to astronomical sizes. Of course, you wouldn't be able to survive the trip to go see it. And it sort of depends on what you talk about when you say, where is the black hole or how big is it? The core of the black hole that used to be a star might be the size of New York City. But of course, it's going to have an influence over a much larger area around it. So you can get, you don't have to get so close to be in real deep, deep trouble before the black hole gets you.
Well, that's cool. it's a very cool thing to know, but it's also it's a hard theory to process in your brain.
Well, it is, but you got to think about the universe the way the universe would think about the universe. The universe is filled with things that are very large, moving very fast, and doing all kinds of things that we don't normally encounter here on Earth, because we're not pushing the laws of physics quite that far. You know, once you start making things that are unusually large, made of particularly unusual substances, moving at crazy speeds, interacting with other objects that are moving the same way or behaving the same way, you can see the laws of nature do some pretty incredible stuff.
Well, laws of nature.
You can't break them.
You can't break them.
You can bend them a little bit. In fact, black holes are places where you bend them. In fact, you can actually bend light. One of the things black holes are good for is what's called gravitational lensing. As light from objects behind a black hole come near it, most of the light will fall into the black hole. But some of the light around the edges will actually get bent around and back to us. And it actually, by bending the light, gives us a chance to see things we might not otherwise be able to see.
When I think of black hole, I think of everything black, but is there any possible way for light to be in a black hole?
Well, light will be in it, it just won't come out of it, and that's why they're called black. They're not really holes. That's the name black hole actually came from a reporter who wrote about them in 1964, and in the title called them black holes in space. But it's not a hole like you would think of a piece of paper. You said before, they're actually a ball or a small spherical object. So you would fall into it that way. It's not like you can tunnel through one and come out the other side.
And did you know that the light cannot escape it?
Correct. That's what makes them, that's their quintessential, the thing that makes them a black hole is that because light can never escape, you can never see inside one. In fact, you can't even detect one directly, or almost cannot, because obviously there's nothing for us to see. There's no light coming out of it. But sometimes what we can see is the effect that it has on things around it.
When I see pictures of black holes this morning, I thought it kind of looked like a tornado in a way.
Well, they often show them that way, and there's a reason. And this is an experiment you can do at home to kind of understand how gravity works. If you take a sheet and you stretch it out real, real tight at all four corners, and you put something heavy, like a bowling ball, in the middle of it, the sheet's going to come down and hang low. And then if you took other smaller balls, like tennis balls, and rolled them across the sheet, they'd roll around the depression made by that heavy object. Well, a black hole would be the equivalent of actually punching a hole through the sheet, that objects would come near that hole and spiral into it and disappear, never to be seen again. But remember, a sheet's a two-dimensional object, and they always draw them like these long tunnels. But you have to think of it like a sphere. So it's a round object that you can come at from any side and fall into it. You ever thought about what happened if you went in?
Well, I did think, and I thought I wouldn't live very long.
No, you would not. What's interesting is because of some quirks about Einstein's theory of relativity, you would look to anyone from the outside that you would be living for at least a while longer. See, gravity has this crazy effect on time. Not only does the black hole warp space around it, but space and time are actually two interrelated things called space-time. And the black hole has an effect on both. So time passes more slowly when you're close to a powerful source of gravity than when you're far away from it. So, in fact, time actually would pass more slowly here on the surface of the Earth than it would appear to somebody orbiting around the Earth in space. Now, the effect around the Earth is actually pretty small because the Earth isn't all that powerful compared to a black hole. But if you were to take two watches, you take my watch and your watch, and I decided you're going into the black hole.
Because,
well, that's too bad. For the purposes of this hilarious experiment, you're going into the black hole. So if we take our two watches and we set them to the exact same time, and I kick you out the door of the spaceship, and you go falling into the black hole, from your point of view, time passes the way it always does. But from me watching you, if I look at my watch, time will go faster on my watch than it will on your watch. If I can actually see your watch out the window of the spaceship, as you get closer and closer to the black hole, you will appear to slow down to me from my vantage point. And from your vantage point, I'll appear to be going fast.
Fast, like a rocket.
Kind of. But basically, time will pass at a different rate for you than it will for me. You won't notice it except when you compare it with something outside of yourself. So I would see you fall into the black hole. I would see you get a little bit redder and a little bit dimmer because light, more and more light bouncing off you isn't getting back to me. It's also falling into the black hole. So you get darker and darker, and you get red too, because the light, the little light that's coming from you that I can still see, is get the light waves are getting stretched out, and that makes them red. So you would get smaller, away from me, go slower, red, dim, and then you would disappear over what's called the event horizon.
I'm going to give you an example of what to look for. Have you ever had to...
in case I happen to bump into one?
Yeah. Have you ever had to vacuum your bedroom?
Yes.
Okay. When you do, you should watch closely because you will see all the clumps of dirt and etc. crumbs start to move towards the vacuum.
Why is my bedroom full of dirt and crumbs?
Well, because you eat a lot, mm-hmm. and I think there was a couple walkers in there, and they had dirt on them.
It's true. My zombie-infested room is a horrible sight to behold.
Yeah. So you'll see all of them, all those crumbs and dirt start to move towards the vacuum. A black hole is much alike to a vacuum, cleaning up the debris left deep in outer space.
It does sort of clean things up a bit. In fact, almost nothing ever comes out of it. They do slowly evaporate over time. Even though no light's supposed to get out and no matter is supposed to get out, at the very edges, every once in a while, the black hole will lose a particle or two. It's what's called Hawking radiation, named after Stephen Hawking, who discovered it. And what it means is black holes don't last forever. And that's why those tiny little black holes that we make on Earth don't devour us whole. They actually evaporate so quickly that they're gone after a few seconds, because they're very, very tiny. Now, the larger the black hole, the slower this takes. Think of it like an ice cube. An ice cube, if you left it out in the sun, the outside would melt, but the inside would stay hard and frozen for a long time. But the more of it melted away, the faster it would melt, and then it would be gone. That's what's happening to black holes. Now, it happens to them so slowly that it will take them trillions and trillions of years to evaporate. So don't look for that happening anytime soon. But it is true that not everything that goes in a black hole stays in a black hole. A few things in the form of particles come out.
It's hard for me to think that such a big star gets smaller and smaller and becomes smaller than an atom. A whole star goes from a star to an atom.
That's the power of gravity. There are four major fundamental forces in the universe, and gravity is one of them. It's actually considered the weakest force. Of the force. The others are electromagnetism, which is you experience as light and other kinds of radiation. And then there's two forces that hold atoms together called the strong nuclear force and the weak nuclear force. And those are inside an atom, essentially pushing out. And so, like we were talking about before, the black hole is where gravity beats all of those other forces into the ground. And that even those forces inside an atom pushing out going, please don't squish me, there's so much gravity that they can't win either. And that's why it just collapses and collapses and collapses to a tiny point.
I have a little question for
you. Yeah, sure, of course. We should get to
questions. My question is, how can something get smaller but remain to keep the same amount of mass?
Well, that happens all the time. Think of it this way. It's what we would call density. So density is how much matter or stuff can you fit into a space. So you could picture a suitcase. And you could fold up your clothes neatly and...
I don't do that, though.
Well, okay. Someone would fold up your clothes neatly and put them in there, and it wouldn't weigh very much because clothes aren't very heavy. But you could take the same size suitcase and fill it with bricks, and then it'd be a lot more stuff in the same amount of space. So it's not a question of how large the space is. It's how much you shove into it. In fact, atoms, the tiniest... particles that make up our universe that are solid or still units of our universe that you could deal with on a day-to-day basis are mostly empty space. An atom is made up of a proton or three or four or however many there are, a bunch of neutrons in the middle, and then electrons that go around them in an orbit. And between them is tons of empty space. So atoms have a lot of room to be squished. In fact, 99% of an atom is empty space. So given that, you could, in fact, if you sucked all that empty space out, or rather shoved all these atoms closer and closer together with an enormous amount of gravity, you could make something very tiny.
Wow. If you fell into a black hole, how long would it take you to reach the end, if there is an end?
Well, there is an end. The end is the center. How long it would take you would obviously depend on the size of the black hole, and they come in lots of different sizes. You couldn't move through the black hole any faster than the speed of light. So if the black hole was 5 light hours across, for example, it would take you 5 hours to get into the center at maximum speed. What's really weird is that when you go into a black hole, there is a process that happens to you that scientists call spaghettification. You actually get turned into spaghetti.
Well, I don't think that would feel very good.
No, it would not. And here's what happens. So picture yourself standing straight up above a black hole. Now, your feet are closer to the black hole than your head is. So the gravity is going to be pulling on your feet a little bit harder than it pulls on your head. So it's going to stretch you out a little bit. And when you get stretched out a little bit, now your feet are even closer and your head is still the same distance away or a little bit more. And so your body will get stretched and stretched and stretched into a long, long, thin tube as the black hole pulls you down. Needless to say, you are probably not going to survive that. It's a one-way trip.
One-way trip, so you're going to have to get a refund for that.
If your travel agent books you into a black hole, get your money back. Don't go on that trip. You're way better off going somewhere like Maui. Much nicer.
It's a little hot, though.
Yeah, black holes are actually pretty hot, too, on the inside. Remember, they are former stars. And although the area around them might actually be somewhat cold inside the black hole because no infrared heat is getting out, there's actually a lot of dynamic radiation going on around the outside of a black hole. That's one of the ways we can detect them. Again, you can't see anything coming out of the black hole because nothing does come out of the black hole, but they could be making all kinds of havoc in the area around them. So there's lots of gas and dust, and as it gets sped up, as it swirls and spirals down into the black hole like water going down a toilet, it gets zoomed faster and faster and faster as it comes around. And as that happens, it gets really, really hot, and it emits all kinds of different light waves and X-rays and things we can detect here on Earth.
I'm just going to say something, and then I'm going to relate it. Think of an apple. Like, okay. I think of an apple, and say it lasts 10 days, which is...
So it's a rotted, mushy apple.
Yeah.
Okay.
When that happens, then...
This is the rotted, mushy apple theory. Then
you eat it, and you have that core.
Yes.
The core lasts a while, but over time, the core will die, too, and it'll dissolve. For a black hole, obviously, it would think of it like the apple. It stays around for 10 days or whatever. Then you have its core. Can the core die?
Yeah, that's what we were sort of talking about before with the ice cube melting. It's this idea that in the universe everywhere, that one of the fundamental rules is nothing lasts forever. Isaac Newton discovered that rule. It's one of the rules of thermodynamics, but it's a rule called entropy. And what it means is everything breaks down over time. And that applies to you and me and the sun and the moon and the stars and black holes too. But because black holes are so powerful, it takes them a very long time to evaporate. So long, in fact, that it's possible that by the time the black holes totally evaporate, all the stars in the universe will be gone and burned out. That's how long it will take. Hundreds and hundreds of billions and trillions of years. Very, very long time. But they will eventually evaporate to nothing.
So you're pretty much saying that a black hole will last longer than our great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren.
Yes, way longer than that. In fact, by the time the black holes evaporate, our sun will be gone, the Earth will be gone.
Maybe even space.
Space hopefully will still be there. It may be a very empty space, but it may be a space where nothing's left but the black holes because they live the longest. And they're going to be around for much, much longer than anything else we can think of because it takes them so long to evaporate away.
Have we any gotten questions?
We do actually have some viewer questions. And if you want to submit a question to our podcast, go to quarksandrec.com. We have our email address there, which is doug@quarksandrec.com. You can also like our page on Facebook. Go to facebook.com and look up Quarks and Rec.
And you have to like us.
You have to. There isn't a button on Facebook to dislike it. You can only click like or not click like. So
yes.
Find us there, and you can submit questions through that. We have one question, which is from Dana L., and he writes, if I go into a black hole, will I meet Ernest Borgnine? Kids, if you don't know who Ernest Borgnine is, he's an old man. He's a very old man who is a very famous actor.
Kind of like a black hole. Old and famous.
Yes. They've been around for a long time. He's been around a very long time. Hopefully he'll be continue to be around for a while. I don't know if you'll meet him. You know, in movies and cartoons, they always talk about black holes being gateways or tunnels to places. But they're not really tunnels at all. They're just places you fall into and you don't get out. But some people think that maybe you could, in certain kinds of black holes, they're not all quite the same, they could be tunnels through space-time, because you could bend space itself with the power of something like a black hole and come out in another place in space. So far, the idea is interesting, but we have no science to as yet prove that we can do it. It's all in the world of the theoretical, but consider that if you could bend space-time enough with a black hole, you could go back in time, even potentially, and meet Ernest Borgnine when he was young. But again, all very, very theoretical. So the best way to meet him is to write him a very nice letter, and maybe he'll write you back. We did have one other submission, which is not really a question, but it was a guy named Meshuggah Yamgazlin. I think that
could Sorry be. If we got your name wrong.
I'm pretty sure it's not even a real name. But whether or not it's a real name, we thank you very much for the contribution. And he wrote us and suggested an article that appeared in the UK, an English newspaper called the Daily Mail. And it had to do with whether or not our universe is actually a hologram. What do you think? Are we living in a hologram?
You know, scientists are, I have to say, are smart, but...
Most of them.
Yeah, I think they're a little smarter than me. I don't think we're living in a hologram because I think I look three-dimensional.
Well, this is where it gets really crazy. So this article relates to a concept in physics called string theory. And you're going to have to hang in with your... This is string theory for kids, so I'm going to try and make it super easy to understand. So we talked about atoms. Our universe is made up of atoms, and you've Yes. heard of those. For example, you hear of H2O as water. That's two hydrogen atoms and one oxygen atom. Atoms are all made up, as we talked about before, of protons, neutrons, and electrons. Well, what are those made up of? Well, those are made up of tinier particles called quarks, which is where our show gets its name. But what are those made of? Well, you can keep breaking apart these subatomic particles into various smaller particles, but the theory goes that like this. How does let's say there's actually six flavors of quark, up, down, strange, charmed, and I forget the other two. But let's say we have a down quark. How does this quark know how to be a down quark? How does it know what type of particle it's supposed to be? Well, the theory goes that these particles are made up of even tinier things called strings. And the strings vibrate. And depending on what they frequency they vibrate at, that tells you what they're going to be. So think of the strings on a guitar. You pluck one string and it's an A note, and you pluck another string and it's an E note. Now, the strings are all roughly the same, but what makes different music come out of them is the different vibrations. So strings that vibrate in a certain way will create a particle or tell that particle, you are supposed to be this type of quark. And therefore, based on these types of quarks, these types of atoms, and so it goes and so it goes. This theory takes that idea one step further and says, well, what if all of these strings are essentially in a two-dimensional flat world, and they are describing through their vibrations the three-dimensional world in which we live. Now, we'd have no way of knowing that, and this article talks about scientists trying to find a way to test it. That's something that would be very hard to test indeed, but it's an interesting idea.
So does that mean Anakin Skywalker is watching us right now?
No, he did. He is he's good and dead. Spoiler alert, he dies at the end of Return of the Jedi. Came out in 1983. I think we're safe on the spoilers.
Okay.
So he's dead. Although, who knows? Episode 7's coming out next year, so maybe they're going to bring him back somehow. But that's basically what this theory says. And it's an interesting idea that maybe the world we live in, even though it's real, it's not real in the way we think it's real. And we're only in a holographic projection of a 2D world. One other interesting point on this. There was an idea long, long time ago, before science had gotten very far, called the music of the spheres. And the thought was the Earth was the center of the universe, and each of the planets was on a sphere that went around the Earth. And so you had Mars on one and Jupiter on another, the Sun, the Moon, and all the stars were on a big sphere in the background. And as they rotate around past each other, they would make music. And this is called the music of the spheres. So even though that idea turned out to be wrong, it's kind of poetic to think that maybe the vibrations of these different strings make a kind of different music all their own, and that's the universe we live in.
By the way, the guy who made that theory, I think, is dead.
He is dead. Long dead.
I wonder why he got so much publicity because of this wrong, dumb theory.
Well, you know, it took a long time for us to be able to figure out what was right and what was wrong. We developed a scientific method to figure that out, and it's a good method. The method is you come up with an idea, you find a way to test that idea, you look at the test results, and if the test results confirm your idea and you can repeat that test over and over again and always get the same result, then you know it's a good result. And if you don't get the result you think, well, that's okay too, because you found out something new. You got an unexpected result, and maybe there's a different way to explain that. But no matter what, you can, in science, you can always admit you were wrong if the evidence says so. So it's been a pretty good method, and it's gotten us very, very far. It's gotten you all the way to the technology that lets you listen to our voices here on your cell phone or wherever you enjoy this podcast.
I have a little question myself.
Yeah, sure. Let's do some more back and forth.
Obviously, the theory of the Bermuda Triangle.
Sure.
And I believe it's more of a wormhole theory, but is it possible black hole and wormhole has to do with that whole theory and dimensions? And
well, this is an interesting idea. So there's a pop culture idea called the Bermuda Triangle, which is a geographic triangle-shaped area off the coast of the United States in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. And a lot of planes have been lost in it, and boats and things like that. And so there's when you lose that many planes and boats in a place, you start to wonder, is there something wrong with it, or is there something even supernatural about it? And some people have theorized, well, you know, maybe there's a wormhole or it's a place you can disappear. But the fact is, to create a wormhole or a black hole requires an enormous amount of energy that you couldn't really do on planet Earth. In fact, to create a black hole or a wormhole requires the kind of energy that, you know, would be in a star 10 times the size of our sun. And obviously we don't have one of those lying around. So that's not going to explain the Bermuda Triangle. Most likely it's just bad, bad weather. The Atlantic Ocean can be a very nasty, dangerous place at certain times of year. And that's why.
What's the difference between a wormhole and a black hole? Does it mean that there was a worm going through the wormhole?
Well, they call it a wormhole because if you remember, you talked a little bit about the drawing where they make it look like a tornado, the black hole.
Yeah.
So space and time are actually part of a fabric. They not a fabric like wool or yarn, but space has kind of a substance to it in that regard, and it can be bent. So gravity is the bending of space-time. That's why things spiral into things with lots of gravity. And there's a thought that if you could bend it enough, you could create a tunnel. So take a piece of paper, and imagine you had to walk from one end of the piece of paper all the way to the other. That's a really, really long distance to go, and it's very difficult. But what if you were to fold the paper in half and go right from one side to the other directly without having to go through the middle? That's the idea of a wormhole, that you could create, you could open up the fabric of space-time, kind of pry it open somewhere else in the universe, and connect those two ends like a tunnel and go through them, and that way you could bypass the enormous distances in space.
So it's as if it's like a rip in time, kind of.
It is. Well, it is a rip in time. It's a rip in space-time. Now, to do it would require an incredible amount of energy, because space-time doesn't just want to bend like that because we want it to. Again, you can look at a black hole and think, my God, this is the power of, you know, many, many stars put together just to bend space-time into that. The other problem with it, of course, is, one, could you make it stable enough to last long enough and big enough to get a ship through to the other side and survive the trip? That's a whole other issue. So wormholes aren't necessarily black holes, But there's a thought that maybe because a black hole bends space-time the way it does, it's the only object we can think of that can bend space and time to such a large degree that you could potentially have a wormhole out of it. But again, if you couldn't make, if you couldn't survive the trip, it wouldn't be much good. So they're not the same, but they're related.
So when you think of a rip in time or a wormhole, black hole, blah, 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 do you kind of relate to the movie The Langoliers?
I haven't seen The Langoliers, so I will have to go back and watch that to answer that question. I don't know.
Do you want me to summarize?
Yes, if you could please summarize the Stephen King film The Langoliers, or, book,
well,
or the book.
A group of people take a trip, and they say they see the northern lights, the Aurora Borealis. Aurora Borealis. They go through it, and everyone that's that was asleep stayed, but everyone that was asleep or that was up disappeared. They go through, they're like these little monster guys try to get them, and it's something dull with the time. They go back, and they say something about a rip in time, go back, they catch up with time. Does that have anything to do with it?
Well, again, space and time actually aren't two separate things. Space and time are part of one thing that is called space-time. And like we were saying before, it can be bent and it can be broken in certain ways. You can rip it up. Now, you can't rip it up to go back in time, as far as we know. You can, in theory, go forward in time by going very, very close to the speed of light. But as far as creating a rip in time where, you know, some people go off in one direction and other people go in another direction, or we link two different time periods together, so far that's still all the stuff of science fiction. We can't do that yet.
By the way, when Doug meant One Direction, he did not mean the worst boy band in the history of boy bands. He meant science.
Excuse me, Harry Styles and I are very close. We are tight. And that'll do it for this episode of Quarks and Recreation. I've been your co-host, Doug.
And I'm your other co-host, Brandon.
And like we said before, find us on iTunes, like us on Facebook.
Only
like us. And submit your questions. If we got something wrong on this podcast, feel free to let us know. This is science, so if we need to go back and correct something, we're happy to do it. And we should mention our next topic, our next show is going to be on earthquakes and plate tectonics. So if you have any questions related to that, go ahead and send them our way, and we'll tackle them on the show. Thanks so much for listening.
Thank you.